Welcome to another episode of the Oncology on the Go podcast. I'm your host, Russ Conroy. In this episode, Cancer Network's Gina Morrow spoke with Dr. Ginger Gardner of Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center and the Foundation for Women's Cancer about research and advocacy efforts to spread awareness and improve clinical outcomes in the face of rising gynecologic cancer incidence. Gardner highlighted ongoing initiatives such as trials evaluating disease prevention methods and therapeutic strategies like PARP inhibitors, and discussed the next steps for empowering patient education and addressing other gaps in care.
Thank you so much, Dr. Gardner, for taking the time out of your schedule to meet with us this morning. I would love to speak about your drive in this field and really what's led you to where you are. So you're very, very passionate about the need for more research and advocacy for patients with gynecologic cancer. Where does that come from?
Thank you, Gina. That's such an important question. Gynecologic cancers are, in some situations, actually on the rise in this country. The reality is, every 5 minutes, another patient in this country is diagnosed with one of the five gynecologic cancers. So we're talking about uterine cancer, ovarian cancer, cervical, vaginal, and vulvar cancer. That totals approximately 115,000 new patients each year and 1 million worldwide. So this is a really important topic for all of us to talk about, is where are we in terms of raising awareness about the five gynecologic cancers? Where can we empower research and support funding to create new solutions for the disease prevention and treatment of the gynecologic cancers? And how do we really promote an everyday conversation about gynecologic cancers across all physicians, allied health members, patients, and communities? So I think it's really the reasons in the numbers. As a gynecologic oncologist, I'm certainly a bit of a biased audience. I think this is so important that I've certainly dedicated my work with patients to this important cause. And yet I've taken on the role to really advance this conversation at a national and global level through the Foundation for Women's Cancer, so that we can really empower research, education, and awareness about the gynecologic cancers.
That's perfect. Thank you so much. So as with every malignancy, we have unmet needs, of course. In gynecologic cancer specifically, what do you feel are the biggest unmet needs that we're not addressing, but we should be?
So one of the largest challenges that we face among gynecologic cancers is the data that we're seeing about uterine cancer. Specifically, I'm talking about the most common type of uterine cancer, which is endometrial cancer, cancer of the lining of the uterus. Unfortunately, we are in this country seeing an increasing incidence of uterine cancers. And not only that, we're seeing a mortality rate that's twofold higher among Black women in this country compared to all other populations. So this is an unmet need. Fortunately, with advancements in cancer screening and treatment for a variety of other diseases, we're seeing, fortunately, some reduction in incidence and some improved outcomes. But for uterine cancer, we really have a call to action. We really have an unmet need to increase awareness and drive forward the science related to prevention and effective treatments across all of the subtypes of uterine cancer, and specifically endometrial. In addition, I think there's a recognition that we need to advance the opportunity for genetic testing. And I'm talking about large scale for all populations at risk. Thanks to the great work of many in the field and our colleagues in genetics, we recognize that genetic testing for gynecologic cancers has moved beyond BRCA or BRCA. You know, certainly first on the scene and the hallmark of gynecologic cancer screening for many patients is a conversation about BRCA-related risk and screening and testing for BRCA mutations. However, we recognize that the mismatch repair protein screening and the Lynch syndrome catchment, it confers an elevated risk for both uterine and ovarian cancers. And we recognize the growing body of knowledge related to moderate penetrance genes that associate with an elevated ovarian cancer risk. And by that, I'm talking about RAD51C, RAD51D, RIP1, LB2. I mean, there is a growing body of information related to additional genetic determinants that, if screened and identified, can provide an opportunity for preventative action for so many patients. So I think that there is an unmet need to raise that public discourse and awareness about genetic testing and to carry it forward and keep up the public awareness piece commensurate with what our scientific investigators are discovering related to a broader opportunity for genetic testing and disease prevention for gynecologic cancers. And I've got a third one for you, if you got one more minute with me, which has to do with cervical cancer. The expanded FDA approval for HPV vaccine for disease prevention is now for women into their 40s. So while originally approved for women up to age 26, there is expanded approval for preventative HPV vaccination for women in the subsequent decades. And the importance of testing, pap smear screening, and regular gynecologic exams for patients that may be at risk for some of their lower genital tract cancers.
That was great. I'm so glad you highlighted all of them. So thank you so much. So I want to make sure we talk about the Foundation for Women's Cancer. Can you highlight the mission of this organization, everything that you really want the world to know about it? And then also let's talk about some of the fundraising efforts that I know you're spearheading and that the foundation is working through to help people know more about it.
Thank you so much, Gina. I'm very honored to serve as the chair for the Foundation for Women's Cancer. We are the foundation of the Society of Gynecologic Oncology. So as a gynecologic oncologist, our scientific home is the Society of Gynecologic Oncology, the SGO. And the Foundation for Women's Cancer is really our outward-facing arm, our public-facing presence to raise awareness, patient education, and empower research for gynecologic cancers. So our mission as the FWC is to eradicate gynecologic cancers and to do so so that everyone thrives. Our patients, our scientists, our researchers, GYN oncology providers, this is a team effort, and we all need to work together to deliver on that mission. So as the Foundation for Women's Cancer, we have been established over 33 years ago now, and all of our programming centers on empowering and supporting research, improving and making accessible patient education, and raising awareness about the five gynecologic cancers. We just celebrated Gynecologic Cancer Awareness Month in September. We certainly come together for Cervical Cancer Awareness Month in January, Uterine Cancer Awareness Month in June, and really, in my opinion, this needs to be an everyday conversation. So for Gynecologic Cancer Awareness Month in September, we rallied together with our allied health providers, our nurse practitioners and physician assistants in Charlotte, North Carolina. We led an incredible walk through the greenways of Charlotte, North Carolina, and had wonderful hosts from Atrium Health, Dr. Wendell Nauman and Dr. Jubilee Brown, who were out to cheer and support. We really had a really beautiful community event to raise awareness about the five gynecologic cancers and to help support research and raise funds so that we really can find new solutions and empower the future for all patients to either not even have these diseases to begin with, or if diagnosed, to be able to have cutting edge treatments and move towards a cure.
Thank you so much. So let's move into clinical trials. What clinical trials are you working on at the moment, maybe that you're excited about, or if you want to just kind of speak to the variety of different trials out there, what's going on with the state of clinical trials in gynecologic cancers?
That is a very big question. You know, in GYN cancers, it's a complex space across all five of the primary tumor types. Then within each of those, we have subdiagnoses in terms of individual histologic subtypes and molecular characterization of many of these tumors that we treat. So it is sort of hard to parse out one single trial at the exclusion of all others. But what I would say is that we are fortunately seeing a groundswell of increasing availability of clinical trials for GYN cancers. This includes opportunities for disease prevention. I'm thinking about the WISP trials and the TUBA trials that are looking at risk-reducing salpingectomy with delayed oophorectomy for those identified at risk for ovarian, tubal, and peritoneal malignancies. I'm thinking of the groundswell and escalation of therapeutic trials across several of our gynecologic cancers, and this includes targeted therapies, immunotherapies, PARP inhibitors, anti-angiogenesis agents, PARP inhibitors and IO. I mean, we are really at an exciting time when we think about the position that we're in gynecologic cancers and the opportunity for patients to gain access to exciting new drug development that can empower a really promising future for their clinical outcome. So that is a really dynamic space. And I think I would also like to highlight the fact that across the clinical trials for gynecologic cancers, we're very focused on surgical innovation, and we are also focused on gaps in care. You asked this question a minute ago, Gina, what are the gaps in care for gynecologic cancers? And that's those statistics about uterine cancer and reaching to unmet populations and historically disadvantaged and marginalized communities is very important. We have made a major effort on this through the Foundation for Women's Cancer to provide outreach to communities, going to State Fair of Illinois, going to, you know, community events where you might not expect a gynecologic cancer specialist to show up, to reach into community, to move the message about gynecologic cancers amongst historically marginalized communities. And really, everyone can gain access through the Foundation for Women's Cancer website. There are brochures, patient-facing brochures about gynecologic anatomy, fast facts about rare tumor types, information about staging, about all of the gynecologic cancers, disease prevention and treatment options. We have videos about clinical trials, sort of debunking the myth about what is placebo versus active treatment and helping patients sort of overcome what can be barriers to clinical trial enrollment. We have all of these patient education resources available in multiple languages with a very sort of fresh-facing and multidimensional, multicultural accessibility. So for the Foundation for Women's Cancer homepage, one can access a whole portfolio of patient education materials that can really help onboard patients about their opportunities for disease prevention, opportunities about treatment, and leverage the opportunity for enrollment in clinical trials.
Beautifully said. Thank you. There is a really exciting technique that I'd love for you to highlight, uterine transposition. It seems to be a newer tactic in the surgical realm that's being done. Can you speak a little bit on that, just your perspective, your any experience that you've seen with it?
This is such an exciting topic. I have to give credit to the Society of Gynecologic Oncology. It was several years ago now that during our Najat surgical session, we had an invited speaker from Brazil who shared an innovative approach to uterine transposition. This is one of these really interesting areas where it's a gynecologic procedure, but can harmonize to gain benefit across other tumor types. I'm talking specifically about colorectal cancer patients, who many of whom we see an increasing a rise of diagnosis in the young patients diagnosed with this disease, colorectal cancer, many of whom require radiation as a component of primary treatment. For their gynecologic future, we recognize that those doses of radiation treatment delivered to the pelvis will cause dysfunction and ablation of ovarian function, as well as future uterine function. So for those young patients that desire future fertility, it creates a great challenge. So the invited guest to the SGO from Brazil presented on an innovative concept of performing not just ovarian transposition to lift the ovaries away from the radiation field, but actually lifting the uterus with attached tubes and ovaries up and away from the radiation field prior to the delivery of pelvic RT. Then subsequent to the radiation treatment delivery, the uterus with attached tubes and ovary being reattached to the upper vagina with a reconstruction in that location to thereby preserve menstrual, ovarian, and hopefully future fertility of the transposed organs back to their in situ and normal anatomic location after the radiation. So very exciting in concept. I will highlight some of our own team members here at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, Dr. Mario Lateo and Dr. Jennifer Mueller, who have really taken on this opportunity to look at this technique here in New York and are seeing some really exciting results, including the first live birth here in New York from a successfully transposed uterus with adnexa. So I think we're really an exciting time. I think this is but one opportunity where those of us in the gynecologic cancer specialty can harmonize with our colleagues across the other cancer specialties to look at opportunities to drive meaningful improvement, not only in oncologic outcomes, but in quality of life outcomes, such as preservation of future fertility for the young colorectal cancer patient. So really exciting times. I think the other important element that this topic underscores is the importance of surgical innovation. We have such an exciting opportunity with enhanced technology, forward-thinking providers and surgeons at the table in concert with our talented medical and radiation oncologists to really drive forward the best in cancer care. So I think we have to always be thinking out of the box and looking for innovations that can make a meaningful impact for all patients.
Thank you so much. All right. So our last question here is, we are somehow ending the year of 2024 in just a couple of months. Crazy. Looking back, what have you found to be maybe what are some of the biggest advances so far this year? Looking to 2025, what are you excited about?
I think that we are really seeing some impact in improvement for gynecologic cancers with innovation in many of our disciplines. That includes disease prevention and innovative modalities related to treatment, inclusive of surgical innovation, new targeted therapies, refining radiation treatment, and ultimately patient-reported outcomes. So I think that we really need to be, to keep our eye on the ball for where we're going next. We have a call to action for gynecologic cancers. You know, I put on the purple of all GYN cancer awareness and people are like, what's with the purple? It's a complex space to work in gynecologic health and gynecologic cancers because the tumor types, the cell types, and what I'm really excited about is some of the uncovering of the underlying tumor biology and molecular heterogeneity of the diseases we treat, because that really informs us in terms of how we can really capitalize on that expanding knowledge base to design the best treatments for our patient outcomes. So super hard to kind of dial it into just one or two snapshots. Happy to regroup together again on a more in-depth approach on where we are on each of our diseases, but just so thankful that we have this time together today to talk about the importance of gynecologic health awareness and research, because it is so important that we raise this conversation together.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Oncology On The Go podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts are available, or listen online at cancernetwork.com/resources/podcasts. The Oncology On The Go podcast is the official podcast of cancernetwork.com, the home of the journal Oncology. For more information, visit us at cancernetwork.com and find us on Twitter at cancernetwork without the O, or on Facebook and LinkedIn at cancer-network.